Last year, the average life expectancy climbed to nearly 80 years old for American citizens. Extensions in healthcare and a better understanding of our bodies has steadily helped increase longevity. But one American demographic suffered for almost two decades. Last year, a report compiled by two Princeton researchers found that since 1999, white Americans between ages 45 and 54 have greatly increased mortality rates when compared to other groups. The study cites considerable increases to overall health failures, poisoning from drugs and alcohol, and suicide. Joining us now to talk about this is Jill Harkavy-Friedman of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Hi there, Jill.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Also with us is Roxanne Donovan, Associate Professor of Psychology and Interdisciplinary Studies at Kennesaw State University. Hello again, Roxanne.
Morning, Celeste.
Jill, when you see that mortality is going up because of drug and alcohol poisoning and suicide, that seems like it's a symptom of a deeper issue, correct?
Yes, you know, suicide and self-poisonings are very complicated, and there are many factors that are involved in creating that. So it is very much a deeper issue. It's related to mental health, physical health, cultural factors, societal factors.
So then how do you take this research that finds that for this particular group, white Americans in this nine-year age gap, is experiencing a higher mortality? If it has so many, possible causes, how then do you address it?
Well, I think you're raising a very important question, and actually, we see the numbers. We don't know exactly how to explain it. We have ideas about it, and I think you've raised a couple of them already. One being that there is greater longevity, and one of the things we learned from this study is that there's greater physical illness, particularly pain problems, in this generation, in this group of people. And so while people are living longer, the quality of their life may not be optimal. In addition, this study shows that mental health is, as we know, a problem that can lead to suicidal behavior. We know that most people who die by suicide have a mental health condition. And so currently, the issues are access to care, knowledge and attitudes about mental health, and as this shows, integrating mental health and physical health.
Roxanne, let me play you this comment from Anne Case, who's a professor of economics and public policy at Princeton. And she's explaining why this study has caught so much attention.
There are several parts of this that are puzzles that we have to dig into further. The fact that it's men and women, mortality rates by suicide, by drug overdose, by alcohol-related deaths, rising for both men and women. The fact that it's not happening in the African-American community, it's not happening in the Hispanic community, and it's not happening abroad.
Why is this so surprising to so many people that it's, in fact, American white demographics?
And it's not only American white, it's American white working class. So the middle class isn't seeing the same type of shift in mortality and morbidity. So there's something happening with working class whites. And I think since 1999, and some would argue since even back to 1979, there's been stagnant raises for this group, stagnant hourly wages, healthcare access has significantly declined. And also, I mean, you can't ignore the fact that there's more diversity in certain parts of the U.S. And I think this is all contributing to a level of disaffection, a feeling of isolation, and a feeling that they're becoming more and more powerless to influence the system.
So how does that connect for you with what we see going on around? Because, I mean, it's hard to not connect a study like this, where mortality is so connected with mental health and stress, to the kind of anger that we're seeing among voting populations, especially among middle and working class white Americans.
I think that makes sense. There's lots of research to suggest that the more scarcity is perceived, the more likely that discrimination will increase, right? And so there's this scarcity rhetoric, particularly around white working class individuals. And there's also this huge disconnect between the American dream of social mobility, meritocracy, and individualism, and then the reality that's being experienced for working class whites, especially those, which is surprising, that support policies to increase the income inequality, which is larger in the U.S. than in other industrialized countries. And social mobility is also much less likely in the U.S. than in other industrialized countries.
So, Jill, let me again play you a comment from Princeton professor Ann Case. She's talking about the changing job market and how that has affected people, their stress levels when they're unable to adapt.
It used to be the case that with a high school degree, you could get a good job. Yeah. You could get a job with benefits. You could get a job that was stable, that you had job security. And I think people's narratives of their own lives had in them having a job, and the fact that these jobs are gone and they're not coming back anytime soon leads people to despair.
What is this connection between a job and inequality that Roxana was talking about and the likelihood to either abuse drugs, alcohol, or take your life?
Well, there are several things that happen when there's two things, job inequality and there's unemployment. So when there's job inequality, there's, first of all, greater stress. Stress affects us physically and psychologically, and so it puts us at greater risk for anything we might be vulnerable to begin with, such as substance use disorders or even suicide. So stress can play a direct role in somebody who is already at risk. So it's not going to make somebody who doesn't have a multitude of risk factors then engage in substance use or suicide. But if you have that underlying risk, that may never happen. Stress through unemployment and financial distress can trigger that. So that's the stress of not having work. Unemployment also means that you may not have access to health care and you may not have access to resources. And so you might pull back from taking care of your mental and physical health. And so that also increases the risk because we know mental health is always an issue in suicide, or almost always 90% of people who die. On top of that, physical health is a problem. And here we're talking about not even integrating the mental and physical health, which is so important for quality of life and well-being. So there are different ways in which unemployment and financial stress can relate to these factors. In addition, it's that the non-whites actually are having increasing stress, but they're not still the highest group. So their rates are increasing because they're losing access to things they had access to.
And you've brought up a really good point, and I want to bring this to you, Roxana, because I think part of people's surprise with all the talk about, you know, white privilege and the disadvantages, which are real at almost every level that minorities, especially blacks and Latinos, experience in this country, maybe people would have expected that to have a higher group, a higher instance of mortality from these causes. This here is Jonathan Skinner. He's a professor of economics and medicine at Dartmouth. And this is his theory as to why older whites are suffering more.
One possible explanation is that for whites, their parents had done better and they had been doing pretty well. And all of a sudden, the financial floor dropped out from underneath them. While for African-American and Hispanic households, things had never been that optimistic, and so perhaps the shock wasn't quite as great.
And this study is coming on the heels of another study which we saw in which they looked at young people and found that, in fact, African-American children and teenagers were less likely than their white counterparts right now to commit suicide. How to judge all this and weigh all of this?
What's interesting is that ages 5 to 11, black children are twice as likely to commit suicide than white children. So there is some disparity at the very young age. But to your point, why would it be that ethnic minority communities are less likely to suicide, even though there are all these other stressors that are endemic to being ethnic minority in the U.S. And I think it has to do with those expectations. There is no expectation that...
The ones that Jonathan Skinner was talking about.
Right. There is no expectation that the American dream will be a reality. Now, the American dream may be a narrative in ethnic minority communities, but it's alongside other narratives, like you have to work twice as hard to get half as far. You can't expect that anything will be given to you. So I think there's that narrative of struggle and the expectation of struggle. There's the narrative that you may not get ahead, even if your parents did. And there's also, I think, community and social structures that have been created in ethnic minority communities that promote psychological resilience, community support, and social support that kind of buffer a little bit the psychological impact of stress.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Roxana Donovan, who you just heard, Associate Professor of Psychology and Interdisciplinary Studies at Kennesaw State University, and Jill Harkavy-Friedman of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And we're talking about a new study or compilation of studies which showed white Americans between ages 45 and 54 have greatly increased mortality rates caused by health failure, also drug and alcohol poisoning, and suicide. So, Jill, how then do we address this? If some of the anger we're seeing, especially in this election season, is a reflection of what we're talking about, how could we address this on a macro level?
Well, I think that's very important, because there's actually good news there, which is there is something we can do with some of the discrepancies and the stressors that are leading people and limiting access to health care and access to hope and dreams, and also managing physical health problems in a way that you can have better quality of life. So one is that the issue of improving health care, we have a lot more available to help people with their mental and physical health, but people don't access it, first of all, because it's difficult to access, and second of all, because they feel some stigma to accessing it, and third of all, even though we have the interventions, they're not accessible to people. They haven't been disseminated into the field in a way that people can access it. So things that we're looking at through this political climate are integration of physical and mental health care, public education, access to care, and in addition, decreased access to lethal means. So one of the reasons that opioid deaths are increasing is that we've paid attention to how to address pain in a way that it's not something you just have to buck up and tolerate, but at the same time, there's been an increased use in opioids, which are potentially fatal. And so we don't yet know how to help people with pain, we know that's important, in a way that's not potentially fatal. So limiting access to lethal means, and that opioids, other lethal medications, firearms, those are the things that actually make the difference between a suicide attempt and death by suicide.
Roxanne, we've heard a lot about how, say, the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, has made health care, you know, accessible, and millions more people now have health care. Does that mean we've helped bridge the gap to mental health care?
I think it may, and that's the future to behold, right? Because
right,
it's not happening. It may help with access to mental health resources. But the thing related to the numbers that we're seeing in the reversal for working class whites in mortality and morbidity, yes, mental health and physical health resources can support that, but that's more treating the symptoms. Going to treat the cause is going to be a really important thing. And the cause, a lot of people speculate, has to do with income inequality. So addressing income inequality might fix the foundation, so people will be less likely to seek mental health and physical health resources.
You're saying, you know, you're a professor of psychology, and you're saying that in order to fix some of these, the numbers of suicides and death by alcohol and drugs that we're seeing, we have to fix wage inequality.
We have to fix wage inequality, we have to fix access to healthcare, and we have to fix education, because those things are structural, right? So an individual person can go and seek help and get help with their mental health. But there are structural issues at work that are creating this, because alcohol has always, well, hasn't always, but it's been around for a mighty long time, and we haven't seen this reversal until 1999. Drugs have been around, and we haven't seen this reversal. So it's suggesting that people are white working class people are experiencing much more of a vulnerability at this point that has to do with structural changes. And if we look at income inequality, if we look at increasing social mobility, not only do we help white working class people, we help all people from across diversity who are functioning or trying to function at the poor and working class levels.
We have about a minute left or less. Jill, would you agree or disagree with Roxanne's macro solution?
I agree that we have to tackle this problem at every level. We can't just address the individual without addressing the societal problems. And I do want to say that one thing about the Affordable Care Act that leads to hope about mental health care is that it is now mandatory to cover mental health. And with the Mental Health Parity Act, it has to be covered at the same level as other conditions. We have to attack it from the community level, the national level, at every level. So I agree with her that there's not one solution here. It's an approach to life and mental health and how we treat each other with compassion and respect and level the playing field so everybody has access to what they need.
Jill Harkavy-Friedman is the Vice President of Research for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Roxanne Donovan is an Associate Professor of Psychology and Interdisciplinary Studies at Kennesaw State University. Jill and Roxanne, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.